Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hit the button now. We'll be doing this. It'll be some sort of thing. It's not the Untitled Part of the podcast, but it is Scott Tilford and Jules Gill doing something.
Is that the name of this podcast?
That might be what we call it. Scott Tilford and Jules Gill do something.
So no one actually knows what we're going to do. Like, we don't even know what we're going to do. We just do something for 30 something. To 40 minutes.
Yeah, just sort of make it work. I mean, I thought it would be a nice idea to sort of do a bonus UBP style podcast. That's what we'd be tweeting out as. I don't know what I'll be calling it, but it is me and you. It is the take trough. I am going back to the take trough because it's a very overflowing take trough.
Can it be called... you know, Scott Telford and Jules Gill, yes. UBP2 Electric Boogaloo.
UBP2 UBP Harder. I think that's the...
Oh, UBP the 90- Harder. So try and say it real quick with like some aggression. UBP Harder.
We were saying before we came on about like those random sound bites that are in the Ace Attorney games. Just saying like, what's the one that's in Ace Attorney? It's not
okay,
attention.
So we were talking... No, so we were saying that in Ace Attorney, it has objection. And yes. Then in Bishy Bashy Special, it has attention.
Attention. Just, yeah. I just need more of that. I need more random, badly voiced sound bites in my life.
You need to Infinite Crisis on the PS1. Have you played that game?
Is that the one with that you play as that dude who's having like the worst day ever?
Yeah, he's having the worst day of his life. And it's such a silly game. I love it.
I missed that entire era of games and stuff. But anyway, I have gathered together a bunch of some of the best questions that we got given in. So thank everybody very much for sending stuff in for last week. More than enough to sustain another show. So yes, first question from Christopher Snow. Was Generation 7 the best generation? Great stories, mechanics that worked, and games weren't as blurred as, say, the new Assassin's Creed, and you actually got to finish them. Gen 7, for the sake of the audience, is the Xbox 360 PS3 generation. It's two generations ago. So I guess it's whether you would say that the 360 PS3 era gave us the best games ever.
Oh, I'm going to be a real contentious old man here and say that in reality, if we're operating on the principle of minimalist game design, of the simpler your product, the better it is, because you are literally hitting your bottom line of this is what my product is, then we have to go back to the arcade days. Because I just went on a recent glut of playing through SNES and NES games as well. Uh-huh. And I was just amazed at how really simple some of those games are, but how utterly perfect they are. Like, do you remember the feeling of going back and playing F-Zero for the first time on the SNES? Or what's it called? Sunset Riders.
Right.
Or Smash TV. It's stuff like that. It's one of those games that they're just brilliant, brilliant fun.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole thing of like prioritizing game mechanics over everything else. Like, they didn't have to worry about stories or pathos or like making you invest in the character. It was just, no, this is a dude, this is a mechanic, you're gonna... Star Fox. Like, Star Fox plays so incredibly well. Like, I still love Star Fox 2, and that came out in like 2018 or whatever when it finally got released. It's on the SNES Mini. And playing that, I was like, this still plays really, really well. I know the frame rate is a living hell, but I still think it plays really
well. It's slideshow form, isn't it?
Yeah, it's literally like four frames a minute. But it's like, you know, the gameplay mechanics are cool. And the fact that you can transform from the R-Wing into like a weird mech, and then all of a sudden it's a third-person shooter, then you go back to being a plane again. I was like, is this Future Cop LAPD? Because why is there not more transforming things?
I tell you what, mate, you sometimes, I swear your hands, they're made of boxing gloves with knives on, because you just cut straight in for the deep takes, don't you?
That's the pickup line. That's how he gets by.
go up to a prospective sexual partner and be like, you've got hands like boxing gloves with knives
on. Hey baby, are your hands made of gloves
get
with knives
deep.
On? Because you're cutting me. Either way, Future Cop LAPD, very good game, but it sort of got me, made me more excited for a Transformers style game than any of the Transformers games ever have. And so, speaking of game mechanics and stuff, Because, yeah, I mean, the Gen 7 was incredible, you know, like the Mass Effect trilogy and Skyrim and like these massive titles and Grand Theft Auto and like Halo 3 and whatever. But I think for us, because we're a bit older, I think we point to the genesis of all those ideas in the first place. And I totally would say that it's, I don't know, I think it would be more of the 2D era, like you said, like it's the SNES Mega Drive era. Where like
maybe it's the purist in us that's making us say that, because it's a distillation of the idea and the concept. And like, maybe we're cavemen, maybe we're the ones that are in the wrong, because of the fact that they didn't have as like engrossing a story outside of like a few exceptions, like you got your Chrono Cross or like your early Final Fantasy games and stuff like that. The majority of them were just like, here is a very simple premise, go do the thing that we tell you to do. You are literally bad dudes, go save President Ronnie. You know what I mean? Are you bad enough a dude to
President
do that?
Ronnie?
But mate, have you not played Bad Dudes?
I thought you were making that up.
There is a game out there called Bad Dudes, and it is it is unmitigated.
I thought you were taking
trash,
the absolute Michael saying like, oh yeah, just there's archetypal 80s games. Oh, you're bad dudes, go save President Ronnie.
I
like,
swear down the text that's in this game is are you a bad enough dude to go and save effectively President Ronald Reagan? It is mad.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of, because I think it's not to take anything. The thing is, for me, if I start thinking of the best games of all time, then it has to be, you have to group everything in. Like the fact that games do comprise stories has to be factored in. Mm-hmm. And I think you can focus on mechanics, you can focus on the formation of genres and like, you know, those different rule sets, and they have to be paid tribute to. But I still wouldn't say Gen 7 is the best, but I do think you need something with a more of a story. You'd probably PS1 and 64 era, like the Metal Gear Solids, the Final Fantasy VII's, the Legacy of Kain's, the things that started bringing in just enough story, but the focus was still on mechanics.
Maybe you could break down the generations into what they sort of like expressed as a whole thing. If you go back to like the arcade days and the early home consoles, it's like gameplay, that's their focus. Then it's like maybe into this sort of PS1, the N64 era, maybe not in a negative way, but limitations, as in pushing the hardware to their limitations and also working around some stuff with technical like wizardry to make things work on it. Then you move into like the PS2, which I'd say era, which is gotta be like the mass appeal. That's when everyone had a console the world over, and the PS2 was dominating the charge there. So accessibility. And then we move into like the 360 and the PS3 era. And I probably would say that that's where the cinematic, like the storytelling things
like the
really started.
And everything
yeah, like the spectacle games, I guess you'd call them as. Now, just on the cusp of the PS4 rolling into the PS5, I would argue that we're in the superfluous era, where basically loads and loads of development time is dedicated to offering immersion. Where it's like, hey, look, if you stand still on this street, all of these NPCs will go about their day, and there's like a paper cup that will blow dramatically, like with 3D rendering
and
technology.
Read the label on the side.
You know what
I mean?
Like, it's stuff that isn't necessarily needed to make the game good, but it's what makes the game immersive and more connected to the player. So if you break it all down like that, every single generation has their strengths and weaknesses. I guess it's just what you prefer.
I do. That's a really good point that I think, because he's mentioning Gen 7. Obviously, Gen 8 is the one that just rolled to a close. And I do think that the industry went down a few paths that were not very good across Gen 8, like monetization models, like games as a service, weird experiments that favored finance and business rather than artistry and creativity. But we still did get incredible titles like The Witcher 3 and God of War. So it's like, there are going to be, I don't know, like you said, there's pros and cons to each, but for me, it is interesting focusing on the genesis of the things that we like the most in gaming and saying, well, where did they come from and where were they executed on the best? So I guess my shout would be whatever generation the PS1 and N64 is, Gen 3, I think, because it would be NES, SNES, N64. I think that puts it on Gen 3.
Yeah, I guess so.
I never used to think of it this way, but I remember Rich Hudson trying to nail it down to the generations, and I was like, okay, kind of.
You've got to kind of include the ones before the NES, though. You've got to do the Atari Jaguar or the the ZX Spectrum. You've got to do all that sort of stuff.
That thing that played Pong that was in that bloke's basement in the Science Man. Tennis for Two or whatever it was called before it was Pong. Yes, Generation Zero. But yes, not to worry. Next question from Breezy. And then in asterisks, it says, while Man Dreaming. So I'm assuming that's his full name. He's just, he's Breezy and he's a wild man dreaming.
I like that because it's kind of like he's laid back, like a summer breeze sort of thing, but he's also a wild man who is dreaming. I'm dreaming,
he's just letting you know that's the state that he's in. And he says, as usual, Destiny 2 is a large player on my life's chessboard. Love that phrasing. Bungie has been making great changes with community feedback, and narratively it's become a beast to behold. What overall game narratives exceeded any expectations that you had going in?
That is a tough question because there have been so many sort of like gotcha moments when you're playing through video games that are just like, this is fantastic. I love everything about that. I got that especially through my first playthrough of BioShock, because I always knew it was going to be something special from the moment you see Rapture. It's like incredible. But when you start getting into the characterization of the city itself, the lore that surrounds it, all of the different people you meet along the way and how they've been affected by life undersea, I was like, this is brilliant. But I never really felt like so satisfied than seeing that would you kindly thing and just being like, oh, hot. Damn, this is good.
Well, that was the thing with BioShock is like, it's strange imagining a time or remembering a time before BioShock changed everything. Because after post BioShock, like it was like after BioShock, it's like, well, why is your character doing anything? And it broke everything. It was, I remember all those conversations after BioShock of like, well, why does Sonic like rings? Why is Mario collecting gold coins? Like why? It just reframed everything. And I still remember to this day, like driving home after my shift at Argos, because I was on the way home and I had a gaming podcast on. I think I had an old IGN podcast on. It was definitely Greg Miller who was talking about it, and he'd finished BioShock and he was trying to tell the other hosts why it was such a big deal without ruining it. And he was just so freaking out over it. He's like, you guys don't get it, it does something that I can't say, but oh my god. And he was just freaking out. And it's like, that was like such a meaningful extension of narrative in gaming. That like, yes, so few titles, I mean, nothing since then has been able to sort of like get at the heart of a game creation as a medium and just say, look, this is a missing part of it.
The only thing that I can say comes close, and I can't talk about it too much because you haven't fully played this, it's Disco Elysium.
Oh, God, like, I'm so looking forward to Disco Elysium.
Because the final cut is like about a week away now. It's coming out on the 30th or so. Yeah, and Kerry and I, my girlfriend, we're playing through it as we were talking about before. And it's just a case of like, there's some stuff that goes on in that game, which is, you're just like, God damn, these people are much more clever than I am. Like, okay. there are some twists and turns that you just like go, I thought I was going one way with this, and it's completely upended itself and gone.
Because I read like it took them 5 years to get the whole thought, because the whole one of the game mechanics in it, and I've not been reading too much about it because I want to be blown away by it.
Yep,
but vaguely, I know that they have this system of this sort of almost like a board game style menu of like different thought processes. It's what the old Sherlock games used to have, and it's sort of like different thoughts come out of different core thoughts. Yep. And then it analyzes your thought patterns and produces new ones and suggests new ones and things like that. And apparently it took them 5 years to get that stuff down. So it seems like there is this brilliant sort of quasi RPG system in there, and that, you know, you're making decisions and it's saying, oh well, if you went for this, then clearly politically, morally, you think of this. And you're like, oh my dear God, I wasn't thinking that, but I kind of see what you're doing. And then apparently that's the thing. So I'm super curious what that is.
What it does is it just pulls out all of your innermost like thoughts, feelings, fears, and basically puts them on show for you to be like, hey, maybe you're not as good of a person as you thought you were. And it's just like, oh boy, I did not need to go down this rabbit hole.
That's, I mean, I'm so, like I said, I'm so curious how that all plays out. So yeah, I guess you had BioShock, you had Disco Elysium. Yep. Mine would definitely be God of War, the 2018 one. Yeah. Just because going in, I didn't expect anything at all. And I was so done with God of War. Like God of War Ascension was just so meh. And I just felt like Kratos as a character, I hated him in God of War 3. I was like, he just is this big a-hole. And then I love that they wrote a story around that. And it was like, what if what if he was older and he knew he was a POS? Yeah. And he was like, I don't deserve love, I don't deserve a son. And just sort of like doing this whole thing about this like a retired warrior with blood caking his hands. Just having to discover that like, yeah, he can mean something again. And oh, all the messaging and all the thematics and everything in that game is just absolutely phenomenal. That would totally be mine.
It's one of those moments where I was sitting there on my sofa playing through it. And you know the bit where, I'm trying not to ruin it for people who might not played it yet. It's the bit where he finally accepts who he is. And while that might not be a good thing, he can be a better person for his son because of it. And it's just like,
he still has a use, There's so many. I mean, it's weird, right? Because at the very beginning of that game, when it opens up and he's cutting down the tree because they have to burn his wife Freya, or his partner Freya, and he's cutting down these trees, and then his bandages fall off his arm as he's doing it. And weirdly, that really got me. I don't know why. I think it's just because seeing this like titan of a man who like I've grown up with as a character look all forlorn and look sad, and with the bandages falling off his arms, and realizing, oh my God, he's taken the chains off and he's trying to hide it. Like he treats it as a wound. Like just so much symbolism, so much visual recognition in that shot of just this like big, like I said, like tree trunk of a man and looking sad, looking at his past, embodying it, just that right there, I was like, this is actually brilliant. And they only went like further from there.
It is powerful stuff.
It's a good time. It's speaking of good times. Next question from Joe. Favorite Game Boy accessory?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
It's got to be the bloody
is it the Clippy light?
Yeah, the Clippy light, because otherwise you can't play it. The amount of times you sat there just kind of like, oh, it's past 6 p.m. in UK time, which means that it's time to put the Game Boy away because you got to.
Can you believe they did that? Because I forgot about all that until there was a few months ago. We were looking something up about something games of all time or something, and I went back to Game Boy games and I forgot they shipped a whole system without a backlight. Like, just wasn't a thing. Just, hey, we'll sell you the light separately.
You also forget how small the screen is. Like, because I've got an original Game Boy and I picked it up the other day and I was like, whoa, that is a lot of hardware like space. Like, just for this tiny, tiny thing. You're like, oh, look at this. I'm playing Tetris.
Because I still remember getting the little Clippy light thing, and I think it took a bunch of batteries and it was always running out. But I still remember sitting, when you sit in bed when you're a kid and you put the quilt over you and you sort of like sit with your little Game Boy, little campfire style side thing. And I remember just hiding in there, just being like, parents, don't realize I'm awake at 1 a.m. I must play Pokemon. And just like, kind of made it a little bit more magical, but at the same time, that thing was ridiculous. So that is my favorite Game Boy accessory, but I can't believe they had to ship light.
I know. It was like when the Game Boy Color came out and came with it in, everyone was just like, well, we're going to buy this, not because it has color, but because of the fact that it is backlit. Like, I also had...
Other things that like stand out to us, like over the years, like getting the Game Boy Color because Pikachu would actually be yellow.
I know.
And like just things like that.
I will say, actually, there's one more accessory that I absolutely adored, and that was the SNES Game Boy cartridge topper. You pop it into your SNES and be able to play Game Boy games on your SNES on a big TV. And I absolutely love that.
I love the idea of that thing. I keep seeing one of them in, there's a CEX game retail shop near us, or near us in the olden times anyway.
Yeah.
Near the old office. That still has one of those in. And I keep looking at it going like, oh, I could get Minish Cap on the TV. I could get some sort
that
of Game Boy
thing. That would be delicious though.
On the TV. Then I keep thinking, well, Nintendo will clearly do a Game Boy like expansion-y thing for Nintendo Switch Online. They have to do a monthly, like, you know, catalog
You'd
of titles.
You'd think so,
you would think so. But then also it's Nintendo. So, you know, you've got to pay for the light or whatever.
They'll do it in 15 years' time. They'll put it onto a console that barely anyone bought.
The thing is, I mean, like what happened with the Mario 35th anniversary, it's like, well, we'll give you it for a little bit and then we'll take it away. And then we'll give it to you a few months later and then we'll take it away. Like, just, ridiculous. I think that ends this month, actually, the 35th anniversary thing. Just, they'll put it back.
No more Mario. Mario's over.
Nintendo abandons Mario. Next question from Bradley Someone. What Dark Souls-esque game is the best? Great podcast, by the way. Thank you very much. That'll be for the Untitled Banter podcast. Check us out on Fridays is when we're usually doing stuff. But yeah, best Dark Souls-esque game.
Well, I know what you're going to say. I already know it. You're going to say The Surge 2.
I am. Oh, I was thinking Lords of the Fallen for some reason, but I don't know if I still... it probably is The Surge 2. I think it probably
Lords of the Fallen's a bit dumpy, isn't he?
It is a bit...
It's kind of like, oh, I'm carrying a bit of Christmas weight. I'm going to roll, but not me, as like, fast as you want me to.
The thing with the mechanic that I love about Surge 2, which I've mentioned so much, I'll not go into it too much, but the limb-specific damage, giving you specific components to upgrade stuff, and the whole thing, their bonfire system being an XP doubler. So if you don't use a bonfire, or you don't use a checkpoint, you get more XP because you stay alive longer. Minus the limb thing, that XP doubler thing was in Lords of the Fallen. And so when I played Lords, it was just after Dark Souls 2, and I was still high on fantasy souls games, so I was like, oh my god, it's just like, it's Dark Souls 2 but it has a new idea, and I kind of like, I had a really positive impression of Lords of the Fallen. I think I'm the only person on the planet who did, but I thought it was really cool. And so yeah, I think now it would be The Surge 2, but there's a little bit of something about Lords of the Fallen that's well made. It's cool. I like
there's that game in which you harden, what's it called, it's a Dark Souls. It's
fairly
recently.
Thinking of Mortal Shell.
Yeah, I would recommend that. I think that's a good laugh. I'm trying
that
to think
one
of like
messes with my head because you have to factor in blocking into your attack chain.
Yeah, it's quite weird.
Attack you during your animation, but then you can harden to just tank the damage. Yeah, so it's like that thing broke my head. Like trying to figure out the animations.
Could we include? Is it Revenant? Remnant?
It's from the Ashes.
Yeah, the one that's like a shooter. One. Yeah, because that's got like Dark Souls esque, like grindy, like dodgy, like enemies hit really hard. It's very challenging. Mm-hmm. I would say that, and it's got a gothic ish vibe. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say
to play as well.
I've had such a fun time with that game. I played it with Osley and Rich a while back. Like, God, it must have been end of last year for like
times.
But it's like two months, and it was just kind of like just on and off, just having a quick go, and I was like, this is brilliant, and then they just stopped playing, and I was like, this is rubbish without friends.
I remember doing the very beginning of it solo and thinking it played really well. I liked the shooting and everything, but I just didn't keep going that style of game, like, because they bring in a lot of the like you need online, you need people, you need a squad, like you said, and the way the mission design and everything, I was like, oh, it doesn't scratch the soul's itch, but at least it's quite satisfying. Next question from Mackenzie Young. Does Jules have any 40k video game recommendations for someone who's not played the tabletop game but is interested in getting into the lore of the series? Also, have we played Spartan Total Warrior for the PS2? It's a 2000s It's a 2000s action hack and slash game with fun group finishes.
That is ridiculous. What a pull from the past that is.
What a pull should be the name of the if we ever do an additional podcast for old grumpy old man games, we can call it What a Pull.
Basically just us sitting there just going like, do you remember Jumping Flash? I do. Oh, I really like that game.
Do you remember G-Police? Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I really like that game. Do you remember Roll Cage? Oh, I love Roll Cage.
See, I would do that. That would be my reaction every time. Me and you, when we were, this is not even remotely related to the question, but when me
this
and
is
you
the
were.
The EGX links.
Yeah. And we played Grip for the first time, or Grid or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
The thing that's the spiritual successor to Roll Cage. And we were clearly supposed to be seeing 20 other games, but we just kept playing that Grip thing. For the rest of the afternoon. What a time. Anyway, 40k video game recommendations.
Well, my son, welcome to the traveling circus, which is called Best Warhammer 40k Games.
Now, this is the thing. If you're trying to get into the 40K universe, it is quite dense. Mm. I would say that a good starting point is Vermintide. It's not 40K, but it's the fantasy version because it's quite simple. You get your clear sort of cut good guys and you get your clear cut bad guys. It's quite easy to digest and it's very fun and easy to play. The upcoming Necromunda game that we were talking about on the last UBP is meant to explain quite a lot about the Hive worlds, which are basically like big industrial worlds. They're kind of like the mega seas from Judge Dredd.
Okay, cool.
But even more violent and just rife with gang activity and chaos corruption as well.
Okay.
I would say that Worm a Space Marine is a very easy game to pick up as well. It pretty much gives you the lore on a plate because it's just like, this is a Space Marine. They are genetic, superpowered warriors. They follow everything to the letter, or do they?
Right.
And then at the very end, it's just kind of like, ha-ha, chaos wins. You can never beat chaos.
Because I think for me, I've not spent the time getting into Warhammer, but I am going to get the Necromunda thing or whatever it's called. The Doom, because it just looks like Doom meets Titanfall.
And it's coming out so soon.
Yeah, with like the voice acting from like Styx, Styx Goblin Man.
It's going to be like, evening, Govna. You're going down the old hive and having a shoot at it.
Let me blow you all up with my big gun. I just want to blow things up with a big gun.
Dog here who'll bite your knackers off.
I'm curious. We said this on the UBP, but I'm super curious whether that gets in the way or makes it even better. Like there's that quirky voice acting. Last thing from Matt Shaw. You have two choices each. Pick some really underrated indie games from the last few years that not many of us would know about because it's fun to share some hidden gems.
Bloody hell, mate. I mean,
Oh,
bloody hell. I would say that we were talking about this the other day. The Obra Dinn is an exceptional puzzle game with a really unique art style. It's fantastically fun, challenging, rewarding. It's kind of like the same sense of satisfaction you get from playing something like The Witness. It's that sense of like once a puzzle locks into place, you're like, aha, like the astounding eureka moment, which is just all the way through that game.
Perfect. There's a little bit of there's a bit of a Lovecraftian vibe in there right from the beginning. And then it's like a detective style, what happened on this ship that's suddenly been moored at port thing.
Because it's a real thing.
On a real ship.
Yeah, because the story in reality is they just found a completely empty ship drifting, I think it was just outside of Portsmouth Harbour or something like that. And they went on board, found no signs of the crew, like loads of food apparently was still like halfway eaten or something like that.
It's at the end of Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah, people thought that like maybe it was a case of like pirates had come along and kidnapped them, but then they were like, why would they do that and not take any of the valuables in the ship? Like, was it a storm or something like that? But no, because other stuff wasn't broken. So it's you basically just piecing it together, like in this.
But you have like a little. It's been ages since I played it, but you have like a weird supernatural book thing.
Yes, you do.
And that's helping you slot everything together. So it's kind of part guesswork, like kind of like The Witness, kind of like Her Story, which I totally recommend Her Story as well. And then obviously, but it's also graphically made to look like an Apple II game. It sort of looks like a wireframe matrix, which I actually quite like. You really get used to it.
Yeah, I was surprised that they chose that for the art style, but then again, I think that it kind of really works because you feel it's a sense of detachment and a stylistic choice that actually benefits the gameplay quite a lot because it starts putting it together like it's some storybook that you're just kind of, you're not really receiving it as reality. You know that it's not real. It's very interesting.
It contributes to it because like you said, there's a whole general feeling of like otherworldliness to it, and especially when you start realizing what actually happened and stuff. That stuff's awesome. I'll totally mention Her Story, which is another detective style game, but you it's played sort of you're just accessing like an old police archive. It's all very much in like first person, but you're just your UI is just the desktop, and you're sort of going through old interview clips of this woman being interviewed, and you sort of like have to try and get to the truth based on keywords. So like if she just says like, look, I don't know what you're talking about, there wasn't even a knife there, then you can search for the word knife and all of a sudden you'll find all these other clips where they previously asked her about the knife or she mentioned knife, and it's almost like Google murder the game, but like you have to start thinking of like, okay, what word seems like it would make sense, body or broke or whatever. Like if she starts like alluding to a murder scene, then maybe you search the word blood and you find like an older clip from years ago of her saying, look, I you know, there was never any blood or whatever. And then when you eventually have a full picture, you get like a little reveal as to sort of what's been going on the whole time and why you're looking for these answers and things like that. That's a really, really cool game, but it's only on Steam. It's only on, I guess, PC and Mac. But in terms of it being this really cool, it makes you feel like a detective because you end up
That's
getting
cool.
like a notepad and being like, well, if she said this on this date and then she said this, then I know she's lying. And I can then like, you know, you figure it out for yourself as you are figuring out in the game. And it's whenever you look on the Reddit threads, all the fans just have their own like red string style notice boards.
Amazing.
Of like this is what I had at the end of my game kind of thing before I realized the truth. It's brilliant. So yes, those would be a couple of random indie things that we totally recommend mm-hmm. you guys check out. Me and Jules usually do our podcast on a Friday, the Untitled Banda podcast. So please get subscribed to the channel. Well, I guess you'd be subscribed to the channel if you're listening to this, but come back and check us out on a Friday. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.